Welcome to Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Today on the show, local blues man Harry Harpoon. We'll start with a song that he composed for Celia Roberts, a beloved Paonia resident who recently passed away. Celia loved the sound of the sandhill cranes swooping in during crane days. Harry conjures up that image in this lovely instrumental tribute to her.
Aloha, Cecilia.
Oh, that was perfect. I could totally see the cranes coming and going with that. That was really nice. Thank you, Harry Harpoon, in the studio with us on Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot, and that was a song that you wrote for Celia Roberts and played for her right there at the end. She passed away about a week ago now.
She had told Laura Lee down at watching the cranes that she wanted to hear the sound of the crane's wings and the as she was passing. And so That's my attempt.
Sounds like something she would want to listen to. She was so connected to the landscape and appreciated it so much here. For people who don't know who Celia Roberts was, she was a resident here in Paonia, an artist, a photographer, an activist. She worked for immigrant rights. She supported all the arts organizations here, was really involved at the Blue Sage, and just this active, interesting, passionate about art and about the environment here, person that we all are mourning the loss of right now. So thank you so much for doing that and playing that song and just giving us a little bit of time to pay tribute to her here.
Absolutely. She was a wonderful, wonderful human being. And we were all lucky to have her on the planet.
When you live in these small communities, as most of us do in Western Colorado, you can get pretty attached to the other people that you're in this sort of small, small space with. Like, you definitely notice when they're not there anymore, and you realize the impact that they had. Actually, I remember when you weren't living here, Harry, and when I first moved here, you weren't here. You were taking a break from Paonia. I don't know where you went or what you were doing, I was hearing about you.
Oh,
you're sort of legendary.
That was my
here.
Evil twin.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, I did hear you were a bit of a wild man.
I also heard
that you were an amazing musician and that you were this world-class harmonica player and, you know, that you were a little bit of a wild child.
Well, I don't know about wild. It's free spirit, perhaps. This is the third time I've lived in Paonia, but...
Really?
Yeah, I've lived, well, gosh, all over the country, all over the world. And I'm not done traveling, so anyways.
Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get involved in playing the blues and playing the harmonica and... You know, what was your family like? Where'd you grow up?
Well, my grandfather played pretty much every instrument you could name. He had a brass band in Pennsylvania before the turn of the last century. And in East LA, there was a thing called Hub Furniture Show. They were the sponsors, sort of like the Louisiana Hayride kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Dick Sinclair's Polka Parade. And my grandfather played with, on that show, and he played with Cliffy Stone and Spade Cooley, contemporary of Bob Wills. He played so many instruments, it's like somebody doesn't show up, oh, you can cover this, cover that, cover that. He was a horn player, basically, but he played violin, guitar, piano, and... his wife, my maternal grandmother, was a fine pianist as well, and my dad was a really, really fine singer. So there was a lot of music. I was forbidden to touch the piano. It was an upright grand, and I would climb up, open the lid, and drop deep-sea fishing weights down inside, and then I would try to get melodies by hitting the keys with a 3-ounce surf weight. And that was really hard in the ivories, and I was forbidden to touch the piano. So anyways, I'm always on the lookout for a great piano player, if you know any.
So that sort of discouraged you from playing the piano?
Piano, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they handed me a harmonica, and I was three, and I started tying flies about the same time.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm not playing music, I'm fishing, basically. So,
anyways. Right. I was wondering about that because you're one of those people, for some reason, I can't picture you doing a regular day job. I can only picture you as an artist or a musician.
Huh.
I mean, I don't know you that well, but I just, like, that guy needs to be an artist. I can't, you know, picture you.
I've been in the Carpenters Union and the Plumbers Union. And my dad was a union man. He was president of the local United Brick and Clay Workers. He could make speeches in more than one language, and he traveled all over the country.
So you've had plenty of day jobs and also.
And I worked off and on for Beacon's Van Lines for 15 years. I got all over the country that way. I have never played in Michigan, New Hampshire, or Rhode Island. I played all over Western Canada and all over the Pacific and the Caribbean. I've never been to South America or Europe or the Far East. Let's see, I guess Ayers Rock would be about as far east as I've gotten on Aussie. But I never got to Perth, and that was a real shame. But anyways, lest I digress.
Would you like to go to all those places?
Oh, absolutely.
You want to travel to get to every corner?
Yes. Actually, it's a long story. I had a round-the-world ticket and didn't quite make it past Aussie there and ended up back in Hawaii. And because I had originally gone to Hawaii to play with Gabby Pahanui right after he did all that stuff with Ry Cooder. And I got there like 2 months after he'd passed, but I ended up playing with his cousin who had married a friend of mine who was running a sailing school in Kealakekua Bay on the Big Island, on the Kona side there at Kealakekua, where Captain Cook first landed. And so anyways, I ended up living in Hawaii a couple of times. And
you got sidetracked.
Well, yeah. no, it's fabulous. Hawaiians are the...
it's a good place.
Everybody sings. Everybody plays, you know. You catch a bunch of fish and you have... It's another excuse for a party.
Well, that's the other thing you were doing for a long time was you were a fisherman.
Off and on, yeah. My grandfather and my uncle built boats. And I started working on boats. I started down, actually, long range out of San Diego, sport fishing. But my home port is Bodega Bay, about 100 miles north of San Francisco. And I got 2 years to go to get my master's certificate, 100-ton license, which I probably never will, living in the Rocky Mountains. But you never know. I need 2 years more sea time, which you can't have enough time. I'm terribly, terribly conflicted being in the Rocky Mountains because I love the ocean so.
But you get over there, right? You get over to the
ocean. I am headed for the coast in April. I'll be playing in Northern California and Southern Oregon and Idaho, which is kind of coastal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for pretty much the month of April.
Oh, good. So you have something going. Getting you over there, and we'll talk a little bit more about some local shows that you have coming up, as well as a new album that you've been working on in Texas at the MagnaCord Studio. So we're going to hear more about that experience in that studio, but maybe another song first?
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Harry Harpoon in the studio with us today on Talkin' Music. What was that one called?
That's on the new album, the instrumental album. The album is called Houston's Waltz, and it was inspired by a lot of different people. There's one traditional Hawaiian piece on it, and the rest is just my ramblings. Houston has an old promoter in Austin there, and he said, you really need to do this. And so I got to going on the sessions. This was 2 years ago now. I'm really proud of this album. It was supposed to have been out for Christmas, but hopefully it'll be out by 4th of July.
And you're recording it at the Magnachord
Magnachord Studios. Yeah. In, Ben Stevens, the producer and director and owner, he has a shop besides the studio where he repairs old tube amplifiers for everybody that comes through town. He's an incredible guy. He just did an album with Ruthie Foster. And when I was recording, Leon Russell's band was in attendance. And
you mean they played on your album?
No. They were sitting there listening to me play.
Awesome. That's great.
Ben bought the Magnachord company from the family. People were using the old three-track recorders from the 40s and 50s as boat anchors and stuff. You know, I mean, it was... Anyways, he bought the company and all the parts and everything was there. And these are the old machines that they get up to speed and you tweak them and adjust them with big knobs, like on a Flash Gordon spaceship. So it's in running in tune and it's the right speed. And when it's up to speed, then you do a one-take thing with 1939 RCA ribbon mics, and mic placement is everything. It's totally organic. Also, I got to sing through an old EV that came from Chess Studios that Wolf and Muddy and Etta James sang through, and the mastering deck is the same model that they used at Chess when they made all of our favorite records back in the day. And so I am in love with the sound that's coming out there. The only thing that's digital is when the actual thing goes to disc. Everything else is totally organic. One take, that's it. Do it, which suits me just fine. Because I'm quite often the first take is the best. And I'm full of ideas and rolling along. So anyways, Ben Stevens at Magnachord. I've been telling all my friends about this place because it's the real deal.
What do you think the digital world has sort of taken away from music?
It's brittle sounding to my ear. I know Neil Young is working hard on machines to try to fix that and stuff. He had that big crowdfunding thing. I'm not the only one who loves the sound of vinyl, the round, warm, feminine, inclusive, brings you in and caresses you sound. I am not happy with discs.
Yeah.
Never have been. They're better than they were when they started out, but they will never replace dirt and rocks, iron oxide, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Things that actually move, not just 0101001,
right.
But where there's actual things moving, like this old National guitar here.
I know, that's a beautiful guitar. I don't know anything about guitars, and I love that guitar.
This is
why do I love it?
Well, it's a Native American instrument invented by the Dopera brothers in 1926. In Los Angeles, actually. I got to meet the brothers. A friend of mine who's now passed away, he ended up as the president of National, Don Young, just passed away here not too long back. And he introduced me to the brothers who he apprenticed to when he was 17. And we played music together. And the first time I heard it, was on the radio in L.A., and I had no idea what it was. It was kind of like the first time I heard Jimi Hendrix, I had no idea was a guitar.
Mm.
And I had no idea what this was. And it turned out to be Booker T. Washington White on the radio, who ended up being my mentor. May he rest in peace. Who also taught his nephew, B.B. King, how to play. Now, that's another story for another day.
Oh, my goodness.
But
well, I'm glad I asked that question. You can hear that guitar even after it stops playing.
Oh, yeah. It's alive. It's ringing.
Yeah, it keeps going. It's pretty amazing. And I'm here with Harry Harpoon. I wanted to know why you chose blues as sort of, and it's blues Americana. I mean, you're not strictly blues, and you throw some other flavors in there. But what drew you to that music?
Well, there were two gangs. I lived on a dead end, one block street, Blackford Avenue, down by Washington Boulevard in Whittier.
Mm-hmm.
It's the other side of the tracks. When my grandfather died, we had to move. It's a long story, but everybody has a story. Anyways, you had to be in a gang. Of course, back in those days, everybody had guns, but nobody brought a gun to a rumble. That was not macho. We fought with fists. And there was a girl gang. And the girl gang would walk down the street singing, "Got me running, got me hiding." And this is a line from Jimmy Reed. And the leader of the girl gang had a Jimmy Reed record. And when her folks were gone, everybody would go over to her basement, get high, and make out and listen to Jimmy Reed. And I stole that record. And it's the only record I had for years. And then I got a hold of the Beatles White Album, and all I listened to was Revolution, which is an Elmore James lick. And there was no picture of Jimmy Reed on the cover.
Hmm.
And I had no idea he was black. Not a clue. But I played that record until I could play every note on it with every instrument. And I could play along with the record, and you couldn't hear me play because I sounded just like the record. Big balls, man. Can't you hear me when I call? Big balls, man. Can't you hear me when I call? Why you ain't so big? You just told me. Yeah, like that, you know.
What resonated with you, like what appealed to you? I know it was the only album you had.
Well, the girls liked it.
Mm, right.
And we got a band going. It was called the White Whale Blues Band. And Marty Meyer was the White Whale. And he was the leader of the band because he had a Telecaster and a Super Reverb. And we had a Japanese drummer, Gary Suhiro. And there was four harmonica players. There was Finch, Johnny Holland, Richard Candelaria, and myself. And we figured, man, we had to play harp to get with the girls. And we had to learn how to play just like that because the girls loved it.
It's still true today, isn't it?
And yeah, so that was it. And of course, that music is on the radio, Wolfman Jack, you know, XERB, 100,000 watts out of Tijuana. You know, it's like that. That was going all the time, you know, the Motown and Howlin' Wolf and all this on the radio, you know. And so that was it, you know. The girls loved it. So, yeah.
I think that's about, I think that's the reason that most musicians are musicians, honestly. That's used traced back to girls about 90% of the time, at least.
Well, I got to be 17 years old, and all of a sudden, I thought, wow, I could play anything I want if I just practiced enough. And then I realized there was more to music than impressing girls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I really, because I made up my mind to sing and play for a living when I was 13. I mean, that was a done deal. But by the time I was 17, I really got serious about playing all day and all day, literally. I used to walk all the way across L.A. from east side to west side, go all the way over to, like, Hermosa Beach and walk back playing nonstop. I would play till I was bleeding at the throat.
Wow.
Break reeds off and coughing them up and stuff. And I'd just play. I could afford a harmonica, too, you know, because I had a paper route and mowed lawns and stuff. My money went for records and harmonicas.
Are you going to play a little harmonica today for us?
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that, but I did bring some.
All right.
Okay.
And I'm here with Harry Harpoon. Well, thank you so much for coming to be on the show. I've been wanting to interview you for a while.
Wow.
And do you think maybe you could play one more?
Yeah, that's a good tune here.